Welcome to Shining Stars, voices of service, hope, and change. A program dedicated to spotlighting the nonprofits and changemakers who are transforming our communities. Each episode shares inspiring stories of the organizations and individuals turning compassion into action. Thanks so much for taking a listen to Shining Stars. I'm Dedalion, and today's guest is Ben Hassinger. He is the founder of Mighty Ook Day, a joyful community center event bringing people together through the world's happiest instrument, the ukulele. And it's ukulele, correct?
It's ukulele. Yes.
I've heard you go on about this several times, so I should know.
You want me to go on about it? Well, quickly?
I'm sure we will once again. Now, Ben's work is also connected with Music is the Foundation. It's an initiative that uses music education and access to instruments to empower young folks and strengthen communities through strumming and song. And Ben is helping people of all ages experience connection, belonging, and hope through this. So yeah. That's awesome. So welcome, Ben.
Aloha.
As long as I've known you, I have never actually had the chance myself personally to sit down and talk with you. So this is a great opportunity for me and hopefully for you
as well. That's great. Yeah, it's funny because we've known each other forever.
We have for quite a while. Yeah. Mighty Ook Day is coming up. But now do you usually say Ook Day?
So I would say Ook, but I say ukulele.
Ukulele.
And that means in Hawaiian, in English, it's a Hawaiian word, means what?
You tell me.
Jumping flea.
I did know that. And that's the funny thing is I forgot about it, but now I remember again. Mighty Ook Day coming up May 8th through the 10th, and it's going to be in East Lansing. Now, am I right? Is most of this going to be taking place at the University United Methodist Church?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then on Sunday, we have a concert at MSU's Community Music School.
Okay. And this has been going on for quite a while now.
16 years.
16 years.
Yep.
What originally got you going, you know what, I want to create this. I want to do a Mighty Ook Day.
Insanity is what it was. You know, I went to Hawaii in 2009. Believe it or not, there was an ukulele festival going on, and I got just totally hooked on the instrument. I came home. We started the Lansing Area Ukulele Group that fall, and then a couple of Toronto filmmakers made a movie called The Mighty Ook, and they were looking for places to show it. So I reached out to them and said, hey, we've got a great ukulele group going on here in Lansing. We have Elderly Instruments right around the corner, which is a big ukulele dealer. Why don't we show it here? So in May of 2011, we basically showed the movie and had an open mic at Sir Pizza. And it was like, oh, it was all over. And I'm going, oh, this went so well. This is great. And people come up and they go, well, what are we going to do next year? And I'm like,
next year?
What? So little by little, we kept building it up into now it's one of the premier ukulele festivals in North America, showcasing just the finest of musicians playing the ukulele.
So it sounds like it kind of just happened by accident in a way.
More or less. And it grew organically. You know, it just little steps, little by little, and just grew into what it is today.
So once you finally got to the point where you were like, okay, I'm going to make this into an annual event. This is going to be a thing. Who were you really wanting to try to reach with this?
Really everybody. Yeah. I mean, the ukulele has always been kind of a underappreciated instrument. People go, oh, it's, you know, it's a fun little happy songs and, you know, you don't need to know much of anything to play it. And the more I've worked with it, I've found the finest musicians in the world that I've ever heard are ukulele players. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing. And to bring this accessible instrument to the broad public, show them, yeah, you can get started pretty easily with it, but you can take it as far as you want to go and use it as an instrument to express yourself. And
do you feel like you pretty much kind of build up a whole ukulele community with this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When we started LAFF, we were one of two ukulele groups in the state. And the other one, which was around before us, but was kind of dormant, I think we're the, what do you call it, the what do you call the starter kitchens that...
All I can think of is the Betty Crocker kitchen.
No, I'm looking for the word that... Anyway, people would come to our LAFF meetings because we're in the middle of the state. So you could come from Grand Rapids or Clare incubator. That's the word I was looking for.
Yes,
we're the incubator for ukulele. So people would come to Lansing, and then they'd go home, and they go, man, I really like doing the ukulele stuff. It's like, well, start a group in Grand Rapids. Start one in Clare. Start one in Traverse City. Now there's 25 to 30 ukulele groups across the state.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you go to visit these other ones or not?
I have. Not all of them, but quite a few of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I've got my family home's in the Upper Peninsula, and there's a couple groups up there that I always make it a point to go up and play some ukulele with.
It sounds like it does a great job actually building a community of people that just all kind of come together for that thing. That's great.
That's the whole thing about the ukulele to me.
Yeah, yeah. So service, if I say that word, how does music, in your opinion, not just the ukulele, but how does music service people?
Well, music in general, and the ukulele in particular, I think brings folks together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a time of a lot of division, and to have something that everybody can put this and that aside, get together, make some music. I call it the most folk of folk instruments because it brings folks together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
How long have you been a musician, and was ukulele always a part of what you did? Or?
No. Yeah. No, I was, you know, the typical, parents had me play piano, uh-huh. which was fine. I was a teenager. I'm getting an electric guitar, and we had some pretty crazy bands. One that got arrested in the cafeteria here at LCC. That's a whole nother story. Okay. But I played a lot of Weekend Warrior bands.
That might be the after show conversation.
That's right. But of course, I was aware of the ukulele, but I really did get hooked on it after that trip to Hawaii. It was just like, man, this is it. Everybody's having a great time. They got smiles on their faces. They're all playing together, you know, like the beginning. People that just picked it up to people that have been playing it for years. And it just captivated me.
Very cool. And you've recorded a couple albums, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a trio called the Ukulele Kings.
Yeah.
And we've recorded one album. We're trying to get another one done, but you know how hard that can be. And then, of course, for years I was in a band, Mystic Shake.
Yeah.
And we had three or four really fun albums, a couple of which had a little ukulele in them, too.
Getting back to the reason you're here is Mighty Ook Day. I feel like you're not just creating an event. It's an experience. So tell us, what can people expect from this? What is it all about?
It's all about the people and the ukulele. So what we do is we start off Friday at noon, and we have a group strum.
Mm-hmm.
So a group strum is where you get a group of people together, and you all play songs together. So okay. That's the way we kick it off. That'll actually be in the Trowbridge Plaza at noon on Friday the 8th.
Okay.
And then during the afternoon, we have workshops. And then we'll have another group strum. And then at evening, we'll have a concert featuring three of our featured performers, mm-hmm. or teaching artists, mm-hmm. and performers. And then Saturday, everything goes totally crazy. We start off with another kickoff strum. We have workshops all day long. We have a lot of kids' activities, including the 10-pound fiddles. Fiddle Scouts is going to be part of Mighty Ook Day this year. A lot of free things like beginning lessons and strums, and then the workshops, the concert, you know, which you pay for. And then on Sunday, we have something called the Acoustic Afterglow, which is kind of the time to sit back and let everybody just informally kind of jam together as far as our teaching artists. And there's some incredible collaborations at that. And I just can set up a small PA and just sit back and enjoy it. Oh, and the other cool thing is, too, in the evening after the concerts are over at the Spring Hill Suites Hotel, which is our official hotel there in East Lansing, everybody gets together and plays ukulele until the wee hours of the morning.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Very cool.
It's so
much fun. And I heard you mention kids. I heard you mention the performers. I heard you mention, I mean, it sounds like this is pretty much open for anybody and everybody.
Absolutely. To enjoy,
even if you've never even played the ukulele.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we have packages which include all the workshops and concerts, but we also have a lot of free activities that certainly we encourage donations. But I like to get people who are just kind of thinking, well, I kind of heard about the ukulele. I don't know if I can play. Well, you know, and they can come and enjoy it without any commitment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get them hooked.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you kind of mentioned getting kicked out of the LCC cafeteria, and I really do want to hear that story. But because we're talking about Mighty Ute Day, give me a story. What's one of your favorite stories about Mighty Ute Days ever since you put it together?
Well, there's so many different ones as far as, you know, just all the incredible artists we've brought in. One thing that really struck me, I mean, here again, I'm deep into the ukulele world, but we had Peter Luongo, who's Canadian. He's the one that actually, I saw him lead a group of like a teenage high school choir playing ukuleles at this festival in Hawaii. Well, I've had him come and play at Mighty Ute Day with an adult group that does very sophisticated arrangements of songs like Toto's Africa and things like that.
Wow.
And people who just aren't used to this, they'll go, wow, I didn't know you could do that on an ukulele. You know, it just really opens their eyes to the potential of this little instrument.
Yeah. Yeah. That is cool. I think probably Uncle Is, of course, is somebody that you're probably familiar with. And that's how I became probably like a fan of it, of the sound. And,
yeah.
And because it was just, it became popular.
Absolutely.
The song did, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Yep. Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, what happened with that is, you know, the ukulele became kind of a joke. Tiny Tim, bless his heart, he was a total musical historian, and he did faithful versions of the songs.
Yeah.
But he was a little odd.
Yeah, he
and,
was.
So when Brudda Is did that Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which really was totally improvised. It was Over the Rainbow, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and What a Wonderful World.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really know all the words, but he went in the studio, and it was just beautiful. It's so beautiful. Everybody's heard that. And then soon after that, a young man, Jake Shimabukuro, did a version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps in Central Park. And that went viral, and that really took it to that next level. So the instrument that used to be a joke is now the most popular instrument in the world, really.
Very cool. A lot of the times, anything like this requires volunteers. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yes.
So are you still looking for volunteers at this
point?
We
don't. Right now, we don't really need volunteers.
Okay.
We've got a good group, the P.D. Strummer's senior group that I run.
Right.
About 35 people strong.
Okay.
We get a lot of volunteers from them and others. And I've got a good core group, of course, which we all need when we're organizing things like that. But I would ask people, just come out and see what the ukulele is all about.
Okay. So what if they weren't able to attend? Is there other ways they could support what you're doing?
Yes. They could go to themightyukeday.com website, look for the Music is the Foundation page.
Right.
And we have ways for them to chip in online if they'd like to. And all the money from Music is the Foundation goes not only to support Mighty Ute Day, proceeds from Mighty Ute Day help support Music as a Foundation.
Right.
But then those funds go to establishing ukulele programs in local schools, in libraries, senior centers. We've sponsored over 40 programs.
With Music as the Foundation.
Yep.
Do you want to elaborate any more on that?
Well, a little bit. I mean, we started Music as a Foundation in 2013.
Yeah.
After Mighty Ute Day 3. We had some extra money left over, and we thought, well, what are we going to do with this? And a friend of mine, Larry Cooley, and I thought, well, why don't we start a nonprofit that helps support ukulele programs in schools, libraries, things like that. So we started this small nonprofit. It's grown little by little. And like I said, over the years, we've done programs in schools, libraries, senior centers. We've supported musical theater programs in the summer, anything music related, music education related, we like to support.
Well, the beauty of it is, I mean, if you expose a child to like music early on in life, it can kind of change their trajectory as to where they're going in life.
Absolutely can. And it, you know, it's such a shame that music programs are sometimes the first things to get cut from budgets of schools. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're kind of a at-risk kid, maybe kind of, you know, right on the border there of dropping out or getting kicked out or whatever. Music is something that can really make you want to stick with it.
Right, right.
And it can give you that sense of confidence, a sense of achievement, sense of pride. You know, your buddies are like, hey, that was pretty cool. You're mm-hmm. up there playing the ukulele. Mm-hmm. And then what I love with the kids is peer-to-peer teaching. He's learned three or four chords. He can teach the kid next to him that's just learned.
Yeah, yeah.
And then combine that with intergenerational learning with the adults.
It was a bonding experience.
Yep, it really is.
Yeah, it really is. You know, since we're on the topic of kids, you know, like as far as them attending Mighty Uke Day, have you got any stories to share where you went, oh, wow, this is fun?
Here again, I think the absolute wonder of it all, like a lot of the kids, maybe over COVID, they started learning the ukulele online, and they've never really played so much with other people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of YouTube stuff out there. Some's yeah. great. Some is like, yeah. But so they get in a group and they see all these people playing ukulele together. It's like, oh, this is really cool. And they just jump right in and they can sit with, you know, like their grandma or something and play. And every year we try to do something a little fun. These last 3 years we've had a mascot now. Hmm. So the first year we had Fretz, the ukulele playing dog.
Oh.
Which was a Jack Russell Terrier. It wasn't a real dog.
No.
Just to tell you. And then last year we had Melody the kitten, and we had Pete the cat come and represent Melody. And this year we have Backbeat Bunny, mm-hmm. who's a hip-hop ukulele.
Very smooth.
We have custom ukuleles with their image on them and everything, and we sell those to help raise money for the foundation as well.
Well, it sounds like you're really encapsulating the goal of this show, and that's taking compassion, turning it into action. You're doing a great job with that. A lot of people feel intimidated by music, myself included.
Yeah.
So how do you create a welcoming space in this situation?
There's really no pressure, no judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, the ukulele is an instrument. If you have really no musical background, you can pick it up and learn to play a chord or two fairly quickly. Like I said, you can take it as far as you want. Some of the most incredible musicians I've ever seen are ukulele players. There's not much of a steep learning curve to get started on it. The instrument itself is quite accessible. It's small, easy to carry around. You can get a decent ukulele for a relatively low price, $80 or so. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to play, easy to carry around. Easy to get started with, and you play with other people. I think that's...
Oh, there it is. I did bring it. I brought mine. So I've had this for quite a while. A good friend of mine gave it to me, and it's just kind of hung on my wall. And kind of like I was telling you, I feel intimidated by playing any instrument because I love music so much. I want to inherently just be able to do it, and I don't seem to be able to. You're going to try to teach me to do the ukulele.
Okay.
Or the ukulele.
I said it correctly.
The ukulele. All right. You ready to teach me how to do this?
Of course.
Because I have no clue.
Okay. Hey,
you got like a big old ukulele.
This is a Kamaka ukulele. Okay. It's made in Hawaii. And
it's pretty.
It's made out of koa wood, which is a native wood to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And this costs about $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't imagine mine costs that much.
No, it doesn't. Even though it says Diamond Head on it, which of course is the famous...
The band, yeah.
Hawaiian.
All right, volcano. What do we got?
So the strings, so we have four strings, and from our head to our toes is G, C, E, and then the UP string, A... Bad joke, but good children eat apples. That's a good way to remember it.
Good children eat apples.
Yes. So if you want to play the first chord to play, you can play with just one finger on the strings. So if we take the string closest to our feet, which is what string was that again?
A.
Okay. And if we take our left hand, we count up one, two, three, and get our ring finger right by the third fret on that A string. You should have that note. That's a C note. So if you strum across all the strings, we can play a song. This is a song.
Now,
I wrote.
You traditionally strum with your thumb, correct?
I strum with my index finger. But most people, look at you. You've been sandbagging on me here. So here's a great song I wrote. I don't know if you've ever heard it before. It goes like this. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Big finish. There you go.
I've heard that you can't really play a ukulele without smiling, and that is true. I was smiling through that whole thing.
I was
smiling.
You were. That was showed even through on the podcast.
It did. All right. We got a little time left, so let's revisit the LCC story. What happened?
Well,
I mean, for you to get kicked out of the cafeteria.
No, we got arrested.
You got arrested.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So what happened was my buddy Eugene Hayhoe and I, we had a group called Utter Chaos. That's UDDER. And, we were a little mischievous back in the day. And we thought, well, what if we went in the cafeteria and played, quote, music, unquote. So we decided, we put posters up all around the Gannon building and said, Utter Chaos live in the cafeteria at noon. So we brought in an accordion and a trombone, neither of which we knew how to play. Eugene, this was the day of platform shoes, the disco era.
Yeah, yeah.
So Eugene, he made his own platform shoes with some 2x4s nailed to his tennis shoes. And we played. It was amazing. So we walked in the cafeteria. We had a whole bunch of friends there. And there were also 6 Lansing policemen there. And they said, are you Utter Chaos? And we go, yes, sir. Well, if you play, we're going to have to arrest you for disturbing the peace.
Really?
Yeah. So we said, oh. So, of course, we played. And we played, we did Smoke on the Water in animal sounds, like, arr.
But they let you play?
Well, they didn't arrest us right then.
Okay.
And then we played Sweet Jane, the Lou Reed song.
Okay.
And then they arrested us. Now, they didn't handcuff us or anything, but they brought us downtown and to the police station. We had to fill out all this stuff. And then it became a cause célèbre of the LCC lookout. We were in the paper all the time. And then it got picked up by the college newspaper press. So it kind of spread around the country. And then we had to go to court. So we had a list of about 20 witnesses that said we weren't disturbing the peace, that we were contributing to the cultural
vibe of the college.
That's right. That's right. So they'd set a court date, and every time it would get canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after about 3 or 4 times, it became kind of a part-time job for our friends because they'd all get gas mileage for coming to court. But finally, the court date arrived. We get in front of Judge Giddings, which this was kind of early on in his career here. And LCC presented their case. We presented ours. We had Zoltan Ferency as our attorney. And Judge Giddings looked it all over and he goes, as a judge here, I have a lot of really important cases that I have to decide. And this is not one of them. And he dismissed it.
Dismissed it. So basically, you were punished through a lot of paperwork and time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, actually.
Did you do it again?
No, we didn't. How are you going to top that?
Right.
Is
there anything we didn't hit on that you absolutely would want to talk about before we go?
Well, one of the things you had asked before is if you were going to describe Mighty Yuk Day, what's one word you could use?
Yeah.
And my word, is aloha.
Aloha?
Yeah, and aloha is this whole feeling of love and togetherness and peace. And I think that's what the ukulele really encompasses.
Right. Yeah, 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 that makes sense. Saying hello and goodbye, right?
It means hello and goodbye as well. Yeah.
If you want to get more information, mightyukeday.com is where you want to go. It's going to be taking place May 8th through the 10th. Various locations, but primarily at the University Methodist Church. And I do have one more question. I almost forgot because it's been so long since I've actually done this, this show. If you had the ability to strum a chord and put one thought into the collective consciousness of the entire human race.
Wow, no pressure.
What would it be?
I would say peace on earth.
All right, strum that chord. Peace on earth is always a good thing, isn't it?
More than ever.
All right, Ben, aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you so much for listening to Shining Stars, voices of service, hope, and change. If you'd like to recommend an organization or an individual to be featured on this program, I'd love to hear about it. Please let me know. lcc-connect@lcc.edu. You can listen to this episode of Shining Stars, along with other programs featured on the LCC Connect Network at lccconnect.com. Thanks so much for listening and sharing your time with me today. I'm Bedelia. And remember, we can all contribute something good to this world. A simple smile, a kind gesture. That's all it takes to expand the power of positivity one inch further. I encourage you to find your shining star within and be the change you want to see. Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's downtown and west campuses offer conference and event spaces that can accommodate over 500 attendees. Professional event planners are available for assistance from setup to catering, free event parking, and on-site customer service. For more information about LCC's conference and event spaces, visit lcc.edu and search conference.
Hi, I'm Melissa Kaplan, and I host a show called Galaxy Forum on LCC Connect. It's all about the creativity in our classrooms and on campus here at LCC and the connections we have with the community. You can catch Galaxy Forum here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Stephen Cook, president of the Michigan Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students in Michigan. One caring adult can make all the difference. Take the pledge to be that adult at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
A message from the Michigan Education Association.
Lansing Community College's Business and Community Institute provides businesses with customized synergistic trainings that realize logistical opportunity. Learn more about the future of business today at lcc.edu/BCI.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at LCC, past and present.
Lansing Community College Athletics has a strong tradition.
25 national championships.
Over 190 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sports. I'm joined today in our air-conditioned studio with Stephen Cutter and our producer, Dedalion Lowry. And gentlemen, I joke about air conditioning, but I just came from our office space, and it's really hot up there today for some reason, mainly because the air condition from the gym is not moving up to
We need to balance that out because it gets really cold down here.
Really?
It's the basement of the TLC building, and there's a lot of electronic equipment, so they keep it pretty cool down here.
Right.
And I forget, I get in here in a short sleeve shirt, and after a while, I'm kind of...
See, I wear a pullover every day because normally our office space is cool because we do get the air conditioning from the gym that blows up into our office. But for some reason, it's not staying as cool, which leads us to our topic today because it just seems like over the last week, all I've dealt with is it too hot? And so my premise is... Are we getting too soft in sports, or have we just misunderstood what toughness really means? And I'm glad we got Coach Cutter here today because a lot of it has to do with mental health. But we've also learned a lot over the last 25 years of what really is toughness in sports. And, you know, it used to be suck it up or, you know, play through an injury. And, you know, some of the biggest memories in sports are, you know, Kobe Bryant playing with a torn Achilles or Michael Jordan in a flu game. But that's not everybody, and there's a story for everybody. And I think that's one of the biggest premises of toughness is knowing your student athletes. And also science has helped us a lot too on, you know, we have lightning policies, we have heat indexes, because there have been far too many heat illnesses and heat deaths in our country, which are all preventable with the right resources available. And I remember one time we played a soccer game on a Saturday and it was really hot and we kept checking the heat index. And we had a kid that we had to get an ice bath real quickly because his body didn't handle the heat like the other 45 kids there. It was scary. You know, but he's not weak, or, you know, we weren't being too tough to play that day because we were monitoring and following the policy. But being under a lot of scrutiny, being that old school mentality, are we getting too soft, Coach Cutter?
Absolutely. I think in general, and when I speak in general, I'm not talking about everybody, because certainly there are the situations where you're dealing with extreme temperatures, whether they're extremely hot or extremely cold, that you have to be very, very cautious. And we're talking about individuals, because everybody is going to be a little bit different, whether it comes to that cold or the hot. But when we're talking about mental toughness, I think of a story that I just heard recently. And it was about this gentleman who took a flight to spend a week in Alaska. And on his flight, he left his home, packed his bags, and he was going to spend 30 days in Alaska, very remote area, and he was going to live off the land. He said on his flight that it was really cramped, and they were playing the same old movies that they always play on those flights. He said it was a little bit hot on there. The air wasn't, you know, what he was normally accustomed to. And he said when he finally got to Alaska and he spent that 30 days there, he was stripped of all the modern conveniences that he had. And this is a gentleman that is, his name's Michael Easter, and he created Substack, and he's not some high-performing former military, you know, person. He's an average Joe that is worked himself into high achievement in life. And he spent those 30 days there, and everything was taken away. And he said when he got on that flight to go home, he appreciated how comfortable the seat was. And the climate cooled air that was being blown into the cabin, and how much he appreciated the ability to have a screen and see something else besides nature. And so the point of that story is, most of our things when we talk about mental toughness are because of perspective. When we feel it's too hot, we think about people that are acclimated to the south, they're used to it. But when southern people come to a northern climate and experience 40 degrees in March, they're not liking that at all. Well, we're used to the cold weather all the time. A 40 degree day in March, we typically have short sleeves on, and you'll see people in shorts because that's relatively warm for what we've experienced. So most of it, when we talk about it, whether it's in our program or anything else, we talk about perspective, and that's a big piece of it.
Yeah, and very interesting, actually, in a different direction than I thought we would head, because I was worried more about defining soft, but, you know, just being acclimated to those clients, and that comes down to preparation and practice. You know, I was watching the College World Series championship game, and the pitcher was undefeated all year and didn't have his best outing, and part of me wondered, it was the hottest day of the year, if the sun impacted him. And I don't know that no one talked about it, because every player was out there in the same weather, but about acclimatizing and also about preparing. You know, I know coaches that if they're going to play in the heat, or I know you do towards the end of the season, you sometimes play two games at different times. You practice at those times and help you.
It's a huge thing, because even like in our baseball and softball programs, we're going south during the super cold season where we're at. So if we're able to get outside, maybe we don't have a lot of snow and we're able to get outside, we're still practicing in 30 some degree weather typically. And then all of a sudden we go on our spring trips, which baseball and softball do, and we go on those spring trips and we're playing in 75 degree weather typically, or sometimes hotter. Well, those student athletes are not acclimated whatsoever to those temperatures. And that's where, like, our nutritionist has done a great job of making sure that she stacks certain things that they need to make sure they're having and taking that they haven't taken in months or even thought about. So that when you speak about acclimation, or I speak about just perspective, those are really similar things.
Not to dive too far into the weeds, but I want to know a little bit about, what does she recommend?
Things like tart cherry juice, liquid IV, that kind of stuff, because a lot of times you're sweating, not in your lifetime, but I'm talking in months. You're just not used to it. And so you can get dehydrated. You don't recover very well because you're just not prepared. Things come into, like, cramping, stuff like all these things that you just weren't used to when it was colder.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to derail.
You're fine. I'm not writing anything down, so I got to try to remember. But perspective is part of it too. I mean, look at us, even with 30 degree weather. At the beginning of the season, we think 30 degrees, this is too cold. By the end, we're saying we're playing in this because we got acclimated to it. To her point, you know, resources have helped out, even to your person that went to Alaska, of, you know, liquid IV, the protein bar, the gel caps, and that. Although there are more weather specific that help with the heat and the weather that we deal with, but it's, you know, injuries are included in there. And, you know, one of the things I learned from you or in our discussions is, when you think you're spent, your mind's only at its 40% capacity, that you still have more to go. And I think that is one of the most telling things about being soft or not, is to the point. I mean, that's a great example. On the way there, he was complaining. On the way home, he's appreciated, and because his mind realized that there is more there. And I think that's something coaches have to learn and help students. Are you hurt, or that just
So there's plenty of studies out there that also talk about that everybody knows what is pretty solid for you. Everybody understands that taking the steps versus the elevator is better for you. But we kind of move away from that. Everybody knows that, you know, you don't have to park in the front row. Park, you know, a ways out and get, you know, an extra 50 steps. Sure. Everybody understands that's better for you, but we tend to shift away from that. And that's why you only see when they do these studies that it's right around 2 to 5% actually take the steps versus the elevator. That is such a small number, but yet everybody knows that it's better for you. So that's kind of where the mentally weak or the mental toughness or the softness that you speak about, that's the stuff that is the real piece of it. We do know about it. We do know what it takes. We do know what we're supposed to do, but we don't always do that.
But our society, and it has impacted sports, has moved into convenience. Even like I laugh and get mad at people come to a sporting event and they get mad when there's not enough parking or they have to park far away, and you're at an athletic event. Walking should be a part of that. And, you know, my family gets mad. I do like actually parking far away. You would blame it on my parking, I'm sure. But I like it. Any way I can add steps to my daily routine.
You actually hit on two things that I did yesterday. So yesterday I went to the elevator and I went, you know what? I'm going to take the stairs today. So I took the stairs.
Excellent.
But then I went to go buy a card for a friend. And I went, well, I could go to Meijer. If I go to Meijer, I got to walk all the way out, up, and, you know, I got to park somewhere. So I ended up at the Family Dollar, because I was lazy enough that I didn't want to go do that.
But and that's our society. And I joke, one of my, it's not my favorite movie, but when I talk about what our future holds, I tell people the movie Waldo. Have you guys seen the movie Waldo? It's where Earth, he's a robot that, like, cleans Earth.
And Wally.
Wally. My bad. Wally, exactly. And the Earth is trash that we built this space station, and everyone lived on the space station, but they're all on, like, rafts. They don't even walk, so they're obese, and robots bring them everything. And I just think, man, that's what our future is going to look like. Because of the things we talk about, it's that fine line of, you know, even as a parent, being too tough on your kids, yet trying to help them get to a standard of grow and develop. And I truly believe sports is, you know, we talk about it being a microcosm of society, but in this point particularly, it really is scrutinized. And we probably have been on the side of being too tough, but not, you know, swinging that pendulum where we become too soft. And in doing the research, it's about defining toughness. And, you know, is it, you know, we think about, is it pretending to be, you're okay when you're not? Is that being tough? And like even being sick, you know, I don't like taking sick days, so I come to work when sick. And I think COVID taught it that, you know, you should stay home if you're sick or something. Even student athletes, we expect them there every day. But is toughness more about showing up consistently, even on the hard days? It's about being coachable. It's about being accountable. It's about self-awareness and the courage to keep going.
I think the other thing that I've learned is some of the toughness is actually being able to admit when you are.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing, the biggest change.
You are not okay.
It's okay. Yeah, that I agree. I think that's the biggest thing, actually, that we've learned to understand that we are vulnerable. We can get hurt, and that it is okay to, I think
to
that
is
the new definition.
Okay.
Yeah, that you are not okay. And we've had athletes do that in the past. Kevin Love in the NBA, Sabone Biles in the Olympics, taking it off because their mental health. Because to perform at the highest level, as we talked about, it takes a lot of things coming together. Luck, not being hurt, having skill, the opponent, but it's also being in the right frame of mind. Or one of my favorite things, and learned it through COVID when there, you know, a lot of anxious things going on, is it's hard to take care of others when you don't take care of yourself. And like if you're anxious or dealing with something, then if something else happens, you can't help them, that you got to be in a good mindset to be able as leader to help somebody else out. And I think that's very important as a coaching staff.
The whole oxygen mask on a plane analogy there.
Yeah. Or, you know, like, you know, there was a small time flying where I was like anxious to fly. And on our flight, we had like a medical emergency, and I pride myself in like stepping up when things go wrong. That's my job every day. But at that time, I was anxious about flying that I was worried about me. I couldn't help them. And I've worked hard to get over that, you know, read some good books. And now I don't mind flying, that I would be able to help that person. on the flight. And again, I don't think that applies to the coaches too much, but coaches have to understand that. And, you know, I don't like the word old school. I mean, that's used pretty prevalent in our business. I think there's some gender biases in our business of what, you know, back to your point of is it easy for males to say that they can be okay or not okay? And it should be for everybody. It's, again, it's an individual thing, but it's a tough thing. I mean, even back to, you know, having camp this week and should we take breaks? And it's a fine line. And there's research. I mean, we have a heat index that we can follow. Like if the temperature this much, the humidity this much, we need to stop.
It's tough, though, because even the heat indexes don't apply to everybody. They affect people differently. So it's one of those tough things. I also think about when you're talking about sports, I think if we speak in phrases like raising children, if you want to raise children that are resilient, you're going to put them in sports because sports will teach them what resiliency looks like. Things are typically not always going to go their way. They're not going to, you know, make every shot or maybe get the playing time that they always want to get. And so the resiliency is built in there. And of course, in life, you need to have a lot of resiliency. And so the same thing goes for the mental toughness. It's one of those things that if you want to build mentally tough people, you have to work on things. You can't just pave the road for somebody that you're trying to teach. They're not going to get the adversity and they're not going to gain the edge of being mentally tough.
Yeah, and I think the other phrase that gets used a lot as a parent or as a coach is tough love, and what that definition, and again, a fine line. I probably use mostly with adversity or an injury, which again, we experience regularly. I always joke that the trainer is in a tough position, athletic trainer in our business, because you got a player hurt and you got a team that need that player probably back as soon as possible. What's best for the team and what's best for the player, and balancing that. And even the person hurt really doesn't know unless they've hurt themselves before, like how much they can push it or how hurt they really are. And, you know, you go to certain doctors and they, you know, prescribe rest right away if they don't, you know, aren't specific sports injury specialists. But, you know, that competition factor brings a lot into it because of trying to get back to compete or being part of a team and fulfilling your role in that team. And it's always been frowned upon if you missed or if you were sat out as an injury or if you got sick. I think COVID actually helped bring us a long way in a lot of those things. But defining tough love as a coach, I think, has become more difficult and again get you labeled as a new old school coach or a new coach that I don't even have the definition. You know, I've been in this business a long time, so most of my career was with the tough love and you know, fight through the injury or kind of a thing. So it's a change in mindset, as you mentioned, of practicing, of finding resources to help you overcome it and get through it. And to my point of redefining what toughness is, because, I mean, again, it was funny, your first example when I said, are we getting too soft? You were right on it right away, thinking we are.
In my notes, I had to pull it up, but a gentleman by the name of G. Michael Hopf, I've heard Tony Robbins say it a lot, but it wasn't his quote. It says, hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. So it's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with, I really have two stories pretty quickly.
You're good.
It's a cycle of us as parents that want to make things easier for the next generation than what it was for us.
Yep.
And by making it easier, you create weak. I also think about when I was at the high school level and coaching high school baseball, I had a teacher that had been there for over like 25 years, and she was really involved in athletics. And I remember speaking to her a ton during our first season, and she was telling me about the kids, and we got into this kids these days and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she was talking about how much things had really changed in the teaching world because of the fact that a lot of times when kids would struggle, when she had started, the kids would get in trouble at home for not putting in the effort to mm-hmm. do well mm-hmm. with their class or classes. And she said that there was almost a paradigm shift at some point where it stopped being their fault and it started being her fault.
Mm. Yep. Hmm. Yeah, I noticed that too, being in education too. Like, when I grew up, if I got in trouble at school, I was more afraid at home what would happen than at the school. And it evolved over time is when a kid got in trouble, they were calling their parent and they were on their way up there as their lawyer because they're afraid of what might go on their record or hurt their future scholarship that they would come and argue. And there's two things there. And this is, wow, this is crazy where we go, which is why I enjoy these podcasts each week. One is accountability that... Now I lost my train of thought on both of those issues because I wanted to talk at both at the same time. But that respect for authority is to that second issue of change that. And then the other one was the American dream, where we do want, I'm a parent, I do want my kid to have better than I do. Sure. And that does lead to some softness because we do things for them or we provide resources for them that we don't have. One of the interesting things I saw in a history class was like superpowers, how long they last. And it's pretty much the same cycle you just mm-hmm. mentioned. You know, mm-hmm. you grow as a country, you fight for what you have, and then you develop a democracy or a government, and then you become affluent, and then you become soft, and mm-hmm. then you start, someone else it comes to take your spot, it starts all over. So it is a full circle. And I think, and I don't want to get in the definition of defining too soft, but I think we are trending that way, that it is something we have to keep in the forefront, address, and make sure we are handling. And thankfully, we got technology and sports science that really can help navigate us.
I think ultimately it's understanding that there's a cost for the theory of leaving it better than we found it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
Agree. And that's a good way to end it. So, all right. So we can carry on about softness in the future because we can die. That went a totally different direction than I thought it was going to go. So let's head to our...
We do have to mention that Greg does not have papers today.
Very impressive.
He came in with an iPad.
And it went okay. I was a little worried. I needed to write something down.
No longer old school.
There we go. See, I can change. That's a tougher thing. That's not soft.
I will say I am old school. I still prefer the paper. So no, I'm on
too.
Board with you.
I was worried today about how this was going to
go. You did good.
I thought this might get scrapped. So, okay, we're in the heart of summer. We've talked about how hot it's been the last week. So is there anything in the summer that you like you drink or eat that you don't do the rest of the year? So
watermelon.
Wow, interesting. Man, he surprises me.
Yeah, that kind of threw me off a little bit. I will
not. I swear he's going to say pizza again, but
I will not ever eat watermelon. So
I'm not a big watermelon eater. My kids love watermelon.
I don't like melon at all.
Ate watermelon,
musk melon, any melon. I don't like melon.
I don't mind it. I don't like seeds. I'm picky in my eating. I don't want to have to fight for my food. So if it's got seeds in it, then you're fighting. But my kids live. We have eaten a lot. My wife complained yesterday. My floor is sticky because of all the watermelon we've been eating in the house. Well, that went a different direction. Dedalion.
Nothing's coming to mind right away. But I will say that on occasion, when the ice cream truck is rolling down the road, I will grab something. So an ice cream treat of some sort.
And I agree. I like ice cream year-round.
I'll eat it like in the winter, but like it's different when you got ice cream on a stick, I guess.
Yeah. I like trying more variety, like an ice cream truck, like a drumstick or a fudge bar.
Yeah, something I wouldn't normally have.
Snow cone. Because we'll get ice cream all the time at the local ice cream store, but But I do agree that too, yep. Ice cream is significant. And the other one I'm surprised is a slushie. You know, I slushies
are your
in
thing?
The summer.
All right.
You know.
Okay. Yeah. I don't as a Mountain Dew fan, I'm combining the two, so it's okay. A Mountain Dew slushie. I'll do that from time to time.
You drink slushies, Cut?
Not at all.
Wow. He is. Okay. Well, next time we're going to have slushies and Penn Station fries.
We're going to bring him in a watermelon slushie.
There you go. So, interesting. All right. Until next time, go Stars.
Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalion Lowry, and you can listen to the episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us next time for more Stars on Sports.
Go Stars!
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.